Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable for this Monday, the 2nd of March. A delight to have you with us. Thank you very much. I hope you had a great weekend. Hope everybody did whatever it is they wanted to do. And if you didn't, you can do it some other time.
There you go.
Excellent. enjoy. We were just listening to the Gin Blossoms. They're going to be at the Mahawi on the 6th of March, just up the hill there, Alan. And
down the hill, actually.
Oh, that's right. I'm thinking of the theater. If you look up, you're up the hill.
Up the hill.
Yes, yes.
But if you're up the hill,
you're down the hill. Yes, correct. So glad we got that worked out. Gin Blossoms, and we're going to be talking to Robin Wilson, the frontman of the Gin Blossoms later on in the show. So we're excited about that. Okay, we have a lot to talk about. Let me introduce everybody to you, and then we'll get started on what was a very busy news week. Not the magazine, but just the concept.
News Weekend.
Too. Former associate editor of the Times Union, Mike Spain, joins us this morning. Hello, Mike. How are you?
I'm well. Good morning.
Filling in this morning. We thank you very much for doing that. Albany Law School professor and director of the Immigration Law Clinic, Sarah Rogerson, is here. Good morning, Sarah.
Good morning.
Yay.
Jen Smith is here, a Berkshire Eagle reporter. Hello.
Why, hello. Yay.
How are you? So just a quick shout out here. International Women's Day is on Sunday, March 8th. That's this Sunday. And from 12 to 3, the Beltrone Living Center in Albany, New York, will be having an International Women's Day celebration. And they're going to be having a panel. And it's going to feature many of the women panelists here on the roundtable. That includes Libby Post. That includes Rosemary Armeo. That includes Jen Smith.
It does.
Excellent. So you all will be there, and that event takes place at the Beltrone Living Center in Albany. It's free. It's open to the public, and you can find out more. We'll have on our website, wamca.org/roundtable, and can find out about that. How are you celebrating International Women's Day? Do you have a gig?
I don't.
She's a woman, and she's awesome.
I was invited to be on this panel, but at the time, I thought that I was going to be in Newark, New Jersey, actually, reuniting with some people from Cory Booker's early campaigns.
Ah, yes.
So that was... That's been moved, and so I'll probably have to check back in with Libby.
Yeah, I bet you can get an invite.
Come on board.
Yeah. Excellent. Well, thank you all. And Alan Chartok is here. Good morning, Alan. How are you?
Good morning. I want to make sure that all of these wonderful women have WAMC hats to wear that day on the panel.
I have a sweatshirt.
A hoodie. Hat.
Nothing says International Women's Day quite like a hat.
I'm okay.
Yeah, you're all right. You're good.
The WAMC Millinery Department.
That's right. all right. Well, good morning, and here we go. Let's start, and we've got a lot to talk about. So these two events happened over the weekend. One, the South Carolina primary, and as expected, Joe Biden won. Perhaps as not expected, Joe Biden won by a lot.
Huge.
A huge win, and took the lion's share of the delegates from the state, and also started some momentum in those Super Tuesday states that will go to the polls tomorrow. 15 and 15 and a territory. Am I correct on that?
Yes.
Then last night, one of the leading moderates in the race, who was who had won both Iowa and came in. Did he win New Hampshire? No. Yes. No.
What do we know? It's also
it was so long ago.
Yeah, that was like a long time ago.
Let's put it this way. He was very competitive.
Yes. So he. Pete Buttigieg dropped out last night, and he took he is getting many kudos from those in the Democratic Party for knowing when his time had come, and doing it before Super Tuesday, and saying, okay, enough is enough. I did my part. I do not see a path forward. There is great speculation that he may, in the coming days, hours, minutes.
to have any impact, it would need to be today.
to endorse Joe Biden. He did not say that explicitly in his remarks last night, but he wasn't very nice to Bernie Sanders. So we assume if those are the two front runners, then maybe that's where the support will lie. So that is my quick mishmash of what happened over the weekend. Now, Alan, what do you make of it?
I've always thought it was mishmash as opposed to mishmash. The reason I say that is there was a guy, an old guy in our building who saw the Chartok twins, and he would call one mish and the other mosh.
Definitely pish-posh. Yes.
Not that it matters that
well,
much.
Well, mishmash is in Webster's as a confused mixture.
Uh-huh. Oh.
Mishmash...
refers to two kids in New York City and look alike.
Is one word I didn't know, but it's a jumble of words, and it is not recognized in Webster's.
I recognize it.
Yes.
Okay.
It is a slang. It's a confused mess, a hodgepodge, a jumble, a mishmash.
Also, the Democratic primary.
A mishmash.
Exactly.
Let me just say, in response to your question, and I'll get off of it, it is interesting that in Massachusetts, for example, we have early voting. So a lot of people voted early before the results were in.
Well, not just Massachusetts, yeah. Many other places.
North Carolina. My brother is a North Carolina resident. He has already voted, and I think he's not exactly happy with what he did. But there you go.
Yes, I think that's definitely a topic at hand, and what do? You don't plan for these things per se, you don't really get a do-over the way the current system exists.
Which is why a lot of people are calling for voting where you get your first, second, or third choice based on,
Yeah.
We don't have ranked choice voting yet.
No, but we will. I think New York City is getting it.
Is it?
That's right. They passed a version of it. Yeah. So if you can get your preferences out there, and they'll be honored even after the first guy doesn't win or the first candidate doesn't win.
Speaking of New York City, it's interesting that they do so many things before anybody else. So, for example, this is one good example, ranked choice voting. Another is term limits. You'll remember when Mike Bloomberg bought his third term. He was supposed to have two terms, and then he bought it. And the way he bought it is he got the city council to go along with it because they were going to get a third term, too. Mm-hmm. I knew a guy who was here in the legislature who is now passed, but who was going to go down to New York and had assurances he would be the speaker of the city council. He said he had the votes. Unfortunately for him, when the council voted itself a third term, they ended up doing that. Well, in any case, look, Joe, the fact that Buttigieg is out, is that right? Yes,
yeah.
He's out.
Tom Steyer is also out. We should know.
Yes,
also
out. Not a bad thing. And it is now coming down to the question of: are we going to have a two-person race? Are we going to have the liberal Bernie Sanders versus the more moderate Joe Biden, or will Bloomberg take enough votes away from Biden so that they split? In any case, this thing is clearly going to the convention. And, for years I've listened to everybody talking about how, we're going to have a brokered convention, Cuomo will win in a brokered convention, this and that, but it never happened. But this time it may be a brokered convention, and it may actually end up that way. Mike, you're going to say,
would it be the first time since 1952? Is that when it was?
Something like that. Yeah. And times like people like Big Jim Farley walk the halls, and those guys would determine who was going to be the presidential candidate or the vice presidential candidate in the case of one Harry Truman, who became president.
Yeah.
But I think it will be interesting to watch. The speculation, of course, right now is how these votes will be split now that certain candidates have dropped out. And I think it was interesting, Alan. You were saying that at the beginning of the show that the Buttigieg voters would likely go with Biden, but there's the morning poll that
yes.
says the contrary, which, and even though which is interesting to me that even Buttigieg himself, who is not nice to Sanders, yet a lot of his voters said that his the second choice would be Sanders.
Which is fascinating. And
yes.
The reason for that, right, we all know, mm-hmm. is that they want somebody outside the system, mm-hmm. and both of those guys are outside the system.
But my understanding of that poll, too, was it was taken before Biden won South Carolina. Mm-hmm. So meaning that many people who would have given their input in that poll did not see Joe Biden as having a chance.
And yet, Joe, when you think, I'm sorry for cutting you off, but yet in California, where Sanders is way, 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 way ahead, I mean, really ahead, we have, and where people, as you say, are voting early, we have no idea whether this is going to change things.
Yeah, but the numbers are showing that not as many people have opted to vote early as 4 years ago.
Right.
California and Colorado, which is also in Super Tuesday tomorrow, indicating exactly what we're talking about, that people are just not sure. They want to see how things are playing out, and there could be more surprises.
The other thing, too, is which I think is interesting, when you look at with both Bernie Sanders and Joe Biden, as you know, now everything is different because you're going to see endorsements probably in the next 24 hours.
$25 million yesterday just for Biden.
That's right. You see the money coming in, yeah. And you see suddenly momentum, and people that said that there wasn't a moderate choice may now see that choice. And also, what the coronavirus has taken over the headlines. So what impact does that have on the race with voters going to the polls tomorrow? And the final thing, and I'll just mention this, is that five southern states where Joe Biden is expected to do extremely well, especially among African American voters. Oh, and I lied. One other thing: the turnout in South Carolina overall was massive. And the turnout among African Americans in South Carolina was massive.
But we can't ignore that was decades in the making, too. I mean, mm-hmm. Biden has had a long history with that particular state, with that particular constituency. And I think...
And got endorsed by the top guy who counts.
Well, yes,
that
yes.
Strategic, and it worked.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But that's not true, per se, with some of the other delegate states. And so I'll be curious, even though we're not talking about them until I say their names right now, with Elizabeth Warren and Amy Klobuchar, what will happen with those campaigns, with the attention, where they are in the top three frontrunners.
I saw an Amy sign in Great Barrington yesterday. I couldn't believe it. One lonely Amy sign.
But they're in New Hampshire, in Massachusetts for sure.
Do you think it's safe to say that if we have not heard by now that they're dropping out, that Amy Klobuchar and... Elizabeth Warren are still in the race for.
Oh, I think so. I think tomorrow will be the make or break for both of their candidacies, and it could be the make or break for Bloomberg. A lot of people are comparing, or some analysts are comparing, what happened to Tom Steyer in South Carolina to what Mike Bloomberg may face tomorrow, and we'll see. I mean, Steyer spent he did to South Carolina what Bloomberg has been doing to all the Super Tuesday states. You know, he really spent a lot of time there, spent a lot of his own money there, and he didn't do that great. He came in third. He did better than Klobuchar and Warren, but he didn't do that well.
Well, yesterday, one of Warren's senior advisors said that she's in it for the long haul, all the way to the convention. Like, put it right out.
Well, Buttigieg's people said that last week.
You got to say that.
That's true.
James Carville said that's the rule. You just say, we're going to win the next state, and you just keep going.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it means that we won't see anybody drop out today.
Yeah, well, I think so. I think so. So I said it's safe to say.
What time is it again?
That what we have.
Well, Warren is an interesting case study here in that, unlike all the moderates who would take away from Biden or Bloomberg, in the case of Warren, the Bernie people need Warren to drop out because it would certainly help. It certainly would help the, you know, the his candidacy. So, you know, there has been some bad blood there. We know it. There was that famous dust up over a woman can win. Remember that? The mm-hmm. whole thing that Bernie allegedly said to Warren. So we'll see, but it's getting exciting. I can tell you that much. Really exciting.
It is getting exciting, and then that brings us to the Bloomberg conversation. I don't know how many of you all saw it, but the
and heard it this morning on NPR.
The interview.
I think so.
With the 3-minute special announcement that he did last night.
I was talking about the 60 Minutes interview.
Oh, the 60 Minutes interview.
With Scott Pelley. Mm-hmm. But yes, the Buttigieg announcement. I think. In some markets, took out the 3 minute of when that was scheduled to be. I don't think that actually was intentional, but it did happen. So there is that. But I thought they did the interview on Saturday, and so it was pretty up to date. They knew that Biden had won South Carolina. They obviously didn't know that Buttigieg was dropping out, but. He made his case, and I just don't know how persuasive that case was.
What did my very good friend James Carville, who I met once, have to say about this? Do we know about this race?
He endorsed Yang, didn't he?
Early on, but I think he's backing Biden
now. Yeah,
he seems to be in the Biden camp.
Yeah. I don't know who he's working. I don't think he's like working for a particular network. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But anyway, I'll look that up during the break.
Hmm? Looks like the mask. Remember the mask?
Yeah.
So, go ahead.
Well, I think the other thing I'm personally interested in watching with the race too is how other voting groups we don't hear about a lot will vote, because you can't ignore the Latino vote in Nevada,
and, which is widely for Sanders.
And you know, in Texas, which is really interesting, Houston has a huge Asian population. California does, and these are populations that you don't hear about really. Even though Trump was over in India this past week, but you don't really hear about these votes yet. You can't ignore their numbers, but you can't also ignore their voting record, which is historically they don't come out to the polls as much as other groups. So I think I will be watching to see who is really maintains that motivation and momentum. Also, young people, the millennials, and those groups who will actually follow through at the polls.
Okay, so
could really take a break? Wild card.
Yeah, sure.
Okay, we're going to take a break. We'll be right back, and we'll continue. Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable. Listening to the Gin Blossoms this morning. They're playing at the Mahawi in Great Barrington on the 6th of March, mahawi.org. We have letters. Let's go to those, and we'll continue our conversation.
There aren't, surprisingly, that many yet, but there will be.
Yes. Oh, let me give the address. It's panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org, where we will accept and consider your letter.
And what should you not do in those letters?
Well, you shouldn't make them too long. You shouldn't misspell anything. You should
not abbreviate.
You shouldn't abbreviate. You should make sure that you pre-read it before you send it, and just know that it's being read on the fly, and you want people to know exactly what it is that you are trying to communicate.
Correct.
That's
you.
All.
Correct you are. Christopher writes, two quick things. One, because there was early voting, many people already cast their votes for Pete. Now, their voice is non-existent. We already talked about that, and that's one of the reasons why ranked voting might be important, which we don't have. Two, I'm quite sure that Perez and the DNC came down on he and Steyer to drop out in order to consolidate delegates for Biden. We can't have a socialist winning. It's in quotes. And it may be sarcastic, don't you think?
Sounds sarcastic.
Yeah. I just want to get that. It's hard to read sarcasm.
Well, I mean, I think it is definitely going to be. It makes sense. I mean, we can come up with whatever conspiracy theories we want to come up with, but it does make sense that as you go forward, and as was just noted on the panel a moment ago, that if candidates like Pete Buttigieg don't feel that they can make the 15% and they don't see that they have the organization and the 44 states ahead, then they would get out of the race. Yeah. I don't know that it has to be a conspiracy from the Democratic Party of trying to consolidate power from one candidate to another.
Well, so as we said here, that Buttigieg is young, he has more chances in the future, and he may be looking to a Biden win as his next move in terms of where he will show up in a cabinet, don't you think?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that is one of the plays that's happening right now. Even that'll be a factor with Elizabeth Warren. It'll be a factor with Amy Klobuchar, and it will be a factor with everybody who's already been in the race, who they endorse. Last week, Tom Friedman, the New York Times columnist, had an interesting take on things. They said whether it's Biden or whether it's Bernie Sanders, what would be interesting is if all of them would get together and then name the cabinet, you know, like Cory Booker would be head of, you know. Mm-hmm.
That was a great article.
I mean, and if the Democrats could do something even close to that, that would be a formidable ticket, you know, and it would give people who liked all of these candidates or, you like this one, I like that one, and suddenly we have a stake in it again, you know, that they're going to be part of the new administration.
Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, I've been looking. There's this 538 has the polls, and you can play with it in a million different ways. And it's kind of endless.
It worked really well in 18.
Yeah,
16.
I know, but it's fun to play with. Just about California, though, real quick. We were talking about Bernie Sanders having a double-digit lead over Joe Biden in California in the latest polls. That is true. Up until Iowa, Joe Biden was beating Bernie Sanders in the polls by 2-1. And then Iowa happens, and he comes in, and his numbers just go down like a rocket.
Sure.
And now they're coming up, obviously.
The American people want to be with a winner.
And I'm
always
just
have.
But I'm wondering, you know, if Biden had that support, does it when he has momentum coming out of South Carolina, and people are looking for someone different? How much in play is California for Joe Biden tomorrow?
I also want to talk just for a second, Joe, if I may, about Trump and Biden. Trump has been convinced from day one that Biden was going to be the opponent, right?
Yes.
And has said so and had tried to build this whole case against Biden and his son and all of that. I still think that Trump knew what he was talking about in this case. Maybe because he's paranoid, but he did know that Biden could be a formulative person who could really beat him. And I think he's worried about that.
Well, evidently he's worried about it. And I think he's also worried about the possibility of a Bloomberg candidacy, because it would appeal to a lot of middle-of-the-road people who are on the fence. It would appeal to suburban Republicans. It would appeal to people who are worried about the economy because Bloomberg has such a reputation. But to your point, Joe, I got to say, you know, watching Biden over the last few weeks on TV, you know, he talks hesitantly. He's been stuttering a little bit. He doesn't look sharp to me. I saw him on TV on Saturday night after he won the South Carolina primary, and that guy looked like
somebody else.
Yeah. He looked 10 years younger.
35 years old. No.
And you know what happened? He had a can of spinach, just like Popeye.
He looked like Popeye.
Well, that's exactly what it looks like.
Yeah.
They had a great editorial
cartoon about that.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
They had a he did a video coming out of some gym in South Carolina, and he and Jill were there, and he's like, hey, everybody, you got to come on in. It's like, wow, we're
tearing a page out of Elizabeth Warren's playbook.
Yeah.
And Elizabeth Warren's been running into her rallies since the beginning.
Yes.
Do you think that's effective when she does that and waves all around that way?
Well, it shows she's very physically fit.
Right.
And that is important when three of the candidates are 78 years old, Bloomberg and Bernie and Joe Biden.
I like seeing a candidate Showtime with a pulse.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Definitely.
Well, it makes sense with, you know, the critiques that have been going on about candidates' health. They have to, any way that they can show it, they're going to. They should.
Yeah.
All right. Paul writes.
I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
Paul writes, roundtable email re Buttigieg's recusal. The first thing that came to mind when I heard about the abrupt ending of Pete's campaign was that he must have made a deal with either Biden, Bloomberg, or both regarding a significant job in a potential future Democratic administration. What better way for Pete to extricate himself from a hopeless presidential run and still maintain his presence on the national stage? That's from Paul in Leiden or Leyden, Massachusetts. Is it Leyden?
I thought it was Leiden, but I don't know.
Yeah. Yes, Massachusetts. Thanks, Paul. We already mentioned that. I don't think this is the kind of thing which is done specifically.
No.
And I think, by the way, in some cases, it's against the law.
Yeah.
Well, in Illinois, it was against law. Got Rob Blagojevich into prison, didn't it? Brokering appointments.
Momentarily, yes. Yeah.
But he's no longer there.
You know, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say about also, and call me a sap, but
call me Ishmael.
The day that Buttigieg had yesterday, where he had breakfast with Jimmy Carter, then he went and walked across the Pettus Bridge from Selma to Montgomery, a day of reflection.
He spoke to Obama yesterday, too,
took,
I believe.
Spoke to President Obama, took a long plane ride back to South Bend, announced that he was leaving the race. I mean, that seems a pretty thoughtful way of doing it.
And his campaign has been, the hallmark of his campaign has been nerdiness and real, you know, sort of like in the weeds, love of country. Mm-hmm. You know, he's a veteran. I don't think that he's looking at this from a strategic advantage standpoint. I think he got into this race because he thought he could do a really good job. And I think once it became clear to him, and I think that's exactly why he's out now, is that he doesn't engage in the same strategic leveraging that has sort of been prominent in American politics. And that's what was attractive about him as well.
Do you think any of the gay stuff hurt him? And in other words, I haven't heard that as an issue. I'm delighted with that. There wasn't the slightest evidence that his opponents were using it against him.
Rush Limbaugh was pretty brutal about it.
But he's not an opponent in the Democratic
Party. Well, he's an opponent.
Oh, no, but
yeah, I mean, he.
He's a
Medal
of Honor winner.
Not a Medal of Honor.
A Medal of Freedom, I'm sorry.
Yeah, Medal of Freedom.
Presidential Medal of Freedom. I'm sorry.
Get your medal straight. Yes, the Medal of Freedom winner, Rush Limbaugh, who also called the coronavirus, it's a cold, he said. Mm. You know, he was pretty brutal and homophobic about it, and raising when Buttigieg did well in Iowa, he was saying, "Can you imagine him up there with his husband on the stage when Trump is up there with his wife and things like that?" I mean, just drawing attention to that might have made some people feel uncomfortable, but you know.
No sign of
things
that in the
are
Democratic
changing.
Party.
Things are changing so fast.
Great.
He's 37 years old. Mm-hmm. He may well be our first gay president. He might not even be. He might be the second gay president. The way things are, you know,
the only
thing remarkable.
That,
it's just wonderful.
The only thing that that concerned me a little bit during the rally last night was they were chanting Pete 2024, and I was like, oh God, I hope not.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
You know? Yeah.
wasn't there a story? I'm talking of a few weeks back, a story that I'm talking like December, that the Biden camp was putting out the word Joe would only go for one.
Yeah.
And that was sort of a, mm-hmm. you know, kind of an unspoken plan, you know.
Well, you remember when they said that Pelosi would only go for one more term?
Oh, boy.
I bet that's wrong.
Of course she is now.
Yeah.
Okay, right. Paul says, round table, we did that. And then Roseanne says, three old candidates. Dear panel, as it now looks like one of the old three white men will be a Democratic candidate, they need to have a young woman of color as the VP. Stacey Abrams comes to mind. Roseanne in Stormville.
Yes, she does, but yeah. I think she'll be a fine president.
Mm. Yeah. Yes, I agree. And also Kamala Harris, another one that we have that is on the watch list today if she were mm-hmm. to endorse Joe Biden.
Yeah, and she does. Harris is a West, you know, Kamala Harris would bring a West Coast kind of cross-country
pizzazz.
Kind of connection to
this. She's also a former prosecutor. She brought in some moderate Dems as well.
And if you watched her in the hearings, she did terrifically
well. She really did.
She was top draw.
But she also could be a great attorney general. Mm. Yeah. And that could be part of the fusion ticket that some Democrats are talking about.
Yeah. And then we heard from Bruce, who says campaign spending. We keep hearing about all the money the candidates are spending on their campaigns, but we notice we haven't seen any ads at all. Why? We don't watch network TV, only streaming service. Considering the number of people, very possibly majority of 30 undervoters, this seems to be like a huge waste of money. Essentially, older candidates advertise to older voters and those that might decide the election. That's true. Anybody got any comment on that?
The only place where I saw campaign ads, and it was for Steyer, was at the gym.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I think I saw a Bloomberg thing.
I've seen a lot of Bloomberg ads.
A lot of
Bloomberg ads. And, of course, you're in Massachusetts, too. Yeah. But they, as are you,
Super Tuesday state,
but,
yeah.
But the ads that you do see, as far as the streaming service, it depends on what service you have. If you have commercial-free Hulu, then you will not see commercials.
Right.
If you do not pay as much and there are commercials there, and those can be political ads as well. It's the same thing of what comes across your screen when you go to
YouTube, social media,
newspaper, sure. Anything. Yeah.
Yeah, I think a bigger slice of that, once you break it down, is going to social media ad buys, too.
Right.
Yeah.
But I think we should all remember that the one thing we learned in South Carolina, as we have been learning all along, is no matter how many people say kids, 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 it's all going to make a difference, it was the older people who really carried the day.
I was really disappointed to read that, Alan, and I knew that you were going to make that point.
Well, we've been talking about it, yeah.
But we also knew that Joe Biden, that's his base, right?
Yes,
I mean, that
yes,
is his base.
His.
So.
Right, but the fear then is, should he get the nomination, will the younger people come out at all, even though they might say, I'm opposed to Trump, I don't like Trump, I want to see a change. If they're not invigorated by the candidate, and evidently Biden doesn't attract that younger demographic, I mean, it's going to hurt.
And again, we'll see what the VP picks.
So the way I'm seeing it is we have just one of the most awful people in the world as president of the United States.
Agreed.
I guess that's pretty simple. So the question is, do young people know that? In other words, is it a motivating factor to get out and vote in historic proportions, which they haven't done up till now? Now, we know they haven't done it, so don't give me any garbage. They have not done it.
The data is there to support what you're saying.
But my question is that the Bernie people, really, who, you know, I mean, I voted for Bernie against Hillary Clinton. I understand what the issue is here, but I got to tell you, I do think the question is whether, because we've heard it from some, we've had letters from some who say, I won't vote for anybody but Bernie.
Well, let me ask you this. There's people who are strong Bernie supporters who I don't think could ever vote for, along what you're saying, vote for Biden. And there's some who could never vote for Bloomberg. So it creates a almost like a separate campaign. Whoever gets the nomination, if it's not Bernie, will have to appeal to that age group and talk about their civic duty. They're going to have to incite them some way. I don't know how to do that. I think they are.
I think, you know, as someone, you know, one of my questions, I was actually talking to Senator Markey the other day about, you know, what...
Name dropper.
And Massachusetts Senator Joe Markey.
And
in the fulfillment of your job, you were talking to Senator Markey, yes.
Well, we're talking about the WLP deal in Massachusetts. But I asked him, I was like, well, while I have on the phone... I've been following, there's a civics curriculum that's in Massachusetts that was passed by law. But what else are you going to do to ensure that that age group can actually get to the polls? You know, it's if they're in high school and classes, you have to make sure that they have access to information, access to the polls. But, you know, there's indications that this age group is also being supported through all their climate change marches we've seen led by young people, walkouts against gun violence. We've seen that they're incited, but are they educated enough about, you know, their civic duties, about politics and politicians? Are they being talked about in
schools?
You know,
the problem with your analysis, I think, Jen, to some degree, is that when we talk about them as if it's one person, it isn't. you know, there are a lot of people who are young people who are very concerned. We'll get five letters right now saying, I object to what you're saying. My son is very concerned. Mm-hmm. But when you look at the turnout in the past, it hasn't been good. Mm-hmm. It wasn't good in South Carolina. It hasn't been good. And for those of us in this room, well, I guess it's showing
voter,
me
voter
now.
Voter turnout in general is abysmal.
Well, it's in the 50s. I mean, yeah. It's in the 50s. And back in 2016, I believe the people under 30, they came out like 12%. If they come out 25%, it would have changed the results.
Absolutely.
Of the election.
Absolutely.
We do. We have to take a break. We're desperately late.
No.
We'll be right back. Don't worry. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. We have letters. We have we just have about 6 minutes before we have to go to another break. That's because I waited so long for the first break. But there you go.
And we're not blaming you because the conversation was very interesting.
Yeah, we'll just move things around.
So anyway, Venkat wrote to us from Rexford, where everybody's a king. Dear panel, if Bernie does not win, would the young vote either vanish or go to a, quote, third party, like in 2016, and thus doom the Democratic chances?
I don't think so, but but I do worry about that, because I think young people today, what I was wanted to say before the break was that young people today are really looking to see representation of them and their particular political interests in the candidate. When they don't see it, they opt out. Because that's their America, right? If I don't like it, I can switch to a different streaming service. And I think what needs to be imprinted on these on folks is that this is big baseball. This isn't, you know, a choice between who gets to be, president of the student body. I mean, obviously they know that, but I think the stakes are so much higher than people realize. It's not just this American idea of do I like this person and would they fit in my Instagram feed?
For example, if you think you might ever need an abortion in the future, there's a lot of high stakes here.
Massive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We heard from Jackie in Niskayuna. It blows my mind that we as a country write off candidates when only 130-something of the nearly 2,000 delegates have been chosen so far. Thanks, panel. Love the show. Where's Rosemary? She's off. She's traveling, right, today?
She is traveling. She'll be back on Wednesday morning.
Yeah. Amy says, quick question. Good morning, friends. Does anyone know what happens to the leftover campaign funds after a candidate drops out? Well, I cannot tell you the answer to that question, except I do know that when people raise a lot of money, they get to keep it, and not for themselves, but they can give it out in the future to other people that they approve.
That's correct.
You used to be able to keep it until the 1980s.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If you retired and you had a campaign fund of couple hundred thousand or more, you could just put it in your own pocket.
No more. Mm-hmm.
But they ended that back, I think, around 88 or 90. And now you can become a sugar daddy to any candidate you like. You can, you can support who you like and use it to donate it to all kinds of good causes.
But,
or charity.
But I think it's a great question, because we're talking about millions.
Now, yesterday, because we are here in the media, we get the correspondences from all the candidates, and the Buttigieg campaign had sent out a letter yesterday saying from Pete saying, "Oh, I'm leaving the race," and da 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 da, and I thank you for everybody's support, and it's been wonderful, and I learned so much about this country. And by the way, can you chip in $5, $10, $15, $1,000? So there's still that campaign's still asking for money, I assume, to make up for whatever you know they still have going on, whatever bills
or
they
support
still have.
His next.
Race. There you go. Or
that you can
going
also
next.
Do. You can hold it. Unless you're in New York, if you're a Supreme Court judge, you have to dissolve the money, and a lot of them just have a big party or something. But the but other candidates can hold it till the next time they run, because those are 14-year terms. They don't want them to sit around.
Check out the bar bill.
So did we ever properly answer the question about a potential third party candidacy? Now, we know the Republicans would love that. We know that the president would love that.
Well, so the suspects, right, would be, one would be...
Well, Ralph is now 88 years old. He's out.
Yeah, he's just a little older than the three front runners in the Democratic Party.
You do have, of course, Michael Bloomberg, who has ruled it out. Now, I don't, he could go back on that, but he seems fairly...
He won't do that. He wants to win. If he doesn't win, he doesn't want to be in.
And the other one would be if he, which was brought up 4 years ago, would be that if he lost the nomination to Joe Biden, would Bernie Sanders take a third party?
Yeah, and I don't know that he's answered it directly. I really doubt it. I really doubt it. He knows it.
That would, to use a verb, yeah. That would Benedict Arnold him.
Well, yeah. some people within the party are saying that now about him. You know, that was one of the claims that Biden made. You know, he's the true Democratic candidate because for several years, Bloomberg left the Democratic Party to become a Republican and then run for New York mayor and then became an independent, then became a Democrat again. And then Bernie Sanders is not an enrolled Democrat. So if there is any old party stalwarts out there, Biden is appealing to them.
Yeah.
We have 30 seconds.
Okay, here we go. Good morning, friends. Does anyone know what happens to the... Oh, we did that. Okay, and Bruce, there's my 30 seconds. Bruce,
okay, so we'll be... hold the stack then. We'll take a break. We'll be right back.
Who gets what they say? It's likely they're just jealous and jaded.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. We have Alan Chartok, Sarah Rogers, and Mike Spain. Jen Smith, I'm Joe Donahue. We welcome your letters. panel@wamc.org. Alan has a whole stack. We'll go with those.
Bruce says, campaign spending. We keep hearing about all the money the candidates are spending on their campaigns, but we notice we haven't seen any ads at all. Why? We don't watch network TV. Didn't we have this?
Yes.
Considering the other number of people, very possibly a majority of 30 under voters, it seems like a huge waste of money.
Okay, we did that.
Sorry about that.
No problem.
Good morning, all. We, the liberals, are not talking about Hunter Biden or Burisma. With all the push by establishment Dems to prop up Biden now, we are settling ourselves up for a repeat of the Hillary email fiasco. Are we setting ourselves up?
Yes.
Definitely.
Well, it's good that it got out there early. I mean, as political baggage is and how Biden plays it, you know, he says he loves his son and he doesn't say a lot more. And Biden's son now, Hunter Biden, is what, in L.A. doing artwork or something like that?
Also helping in the campaign.
Yeah.
I don't know if you saw him thanking Hunter for his work in the campaign. Look, you know, I have some real nice feelings about Biden, but I think he really blew it by not keeping that kid away from having that job in Ukraine. I just think it was a terrible thing. It was a terrible error of judgment. I haven't changed my mind about that. Okay. So then we heard from Byron, who said, I'd like to bring up the aspect of the general election. Oh, by the way, I want to go back to that other letter. The reason you're not seeing it is they're not spending a lot. The Democrats aren't spending a lot of money in New York yet. They're spending it where they think they're getting the biggest bang for their buck.
Yeah.
And in South Carolina, they spent a fortune. And one of the things about Buttigieg is that he wasn't able to see a path forward because he had no more money. He spent it all there. Byron says, another aspect of the race, I'd like to bring up an aspect of the general election that I seldom hear any discussion on. People talk about which Democrat can bring out the middle. But what about the Republican voters who may simply stay home out of disgust for Donald Trump? And that's Byron from Red Hook.
April 28th is the New York primary, so we'll likely, if it
Why
isn't
they do that, I
cleared
don't know.
Out by now, it's too late.
It's crazy.
It gives New York less of a role in picking the national ticket, but it is April 28th.
You know, that's a really good point, and it hedges against the whole idea that Sanders is so toxic because, you know, if people are if we're not getting Trump voters, but they're staying home, I mean, it's sort of the flip of what happened the last time around. Mm-hmm. And I think I could imagine Republican voters who are, especially Christian Republican voters, who are sitting there saying to themselves, well, I can't fill in the little circle next to Donald Trump's name, but I can't vote for Bernie Sanders either.
Well, that's a vote for the Democrats, obviously, whoever the Democrat is. But do you really see any evidence, Sarah, for the Republican disaffection with this president? The polls aren't showing it.
Not in the polls. I don't see it in the broad-based polls. But I wonder about people who are not declared, who may not be in the polling data, who go to church every Sunday, who, you know, are just, you know, they wake up, they go to work, they take care of their families. There are a lot of people out there that are really disaffected by this president because of their faith.
Okay, so So you have roots, not to get too personal, but you have roots into that community,
right?
I do. Okay. And my question for you is, do you see evidence of that? Do you see the evidence of the disaffection?
I do. I do. I see. I mean, and that's completely anecdotal and from the middle of America, but I see in my own family, people who have traditionally voted Republican who just cannot, and in fact have been motivated to vote on the Democratic ticket. We have people changing their parties formally because they're so disgusted.
Juan writes us, Pete. Pete is not outside the system. He has $76 million raised in the wine caves that says otherwise. And that's from Juan, who writes us fairly regularly. Mm-hmm. And then also Philip, who says Bloomberg. I watched Bernie, Elizabeth, Joe, and Amy on TV over the weekend. I like them all. Then I saw Bloomberg on 60 Minutes. I believe he's the only one that can play dirty enough to beat Trump. I don't trust the others to do what it takes. Bloomberg will take it to Trump.
Yeah, that's kind of a sad reality that we have to look for somebody who's not above board and somebody who we respect less because he can go at it better. I mean, if that's the case.
I think his problem, you talk about Biden having not done well in the debates or having not speaking, who doesn't speak well. Bloomberg, you know, who I have some real appreciation for, he has really not shown me anything in his ability to communicate.
Well, I saw the 3-minute paid for commercial he did last night that was pretty much about the coronavirus. He looked extremely credible. He looked calm. He talked about the need to work together with foreign countries, to work together with the states and the federal government and to have plans ahead of time and people in place to do it. I mean, it was extremely reasonable. He does really well when he talks like that, I think. I think when he's under pressure and people are challenging him, he doesn't do so well.
Anyway, Mike writes about Amy Klobuchar. I forgot what new media reported this, but they stated that Amy Klobuchar was going to drop out, but after talks between Klobuchar and the Biden campaigns, the Biden campaign convinced Klobuchar not to announce until after the Super Tuesday. The concern was if Klobuchar announced prior to Super Tuesday, her voters in Minnesota would switch to Sanders.
That's speculative.
Yes.
Yeah, I don't think there's anything.
I don't know that that's based on fact, but it's reasonable speculation. Mm. The question is, if she does not do very well in her home state and Sanders does as well as her or beats her in her home state, how can she even carry a national
challenge?
And by the way, that could happen, could it not, in our state of Massachusetts?
Massachusetts, absolutely.
Yeah. It's more than possible that at least Sanders was on the upsurge, and it looked like he could be
won. What's the polling say? Is there polling strictly for Massachusetts?
I will check, Mike.
And tomorrow's Super Tuesday.
I think the polling was saying he was
the master of polls.
That he was really on the ascendancy to the point where he was coming to someplace like Springfield in order to have
a campaign. Yeah, he was in Springfield on Friday.
Yeah. Mm. He was already?
Yes.
Yes, Friday, yeah. Friday night. Right.
And so much I know. Vincent says, Pete, I'm sad to hear about Buttigieg dropping out of the race. The white elephant that has never been discussed concerning Mayor Pete is blacks. And Latinos tend to be blacks and Latinos tend to be less open-minded and more traditional and conservative when it comes to, quote, family values. Trust me, I know firsthand. Mr. Buttigieg was never going to carry the black or Hispanic vote. Have a great day and keep up the wonderful work. That's Vincent in Kingston. Vincent in Kingston. Well, Vincent, here's the problem. He had some baggage.
He does. I was going to say there are myriad issues.
During
the
campaign,
yes.
Yeah, there was a mishandled police shooting of a black man. So
that took him off the trail for a week.
Goes
dealing with
beyond
that.
Conservatism.
Senators Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders of Vermont are locked in a statistical tie ahead of the Massachusetts primary on Tuesday. This from 12 hours ago. That according to a poll released by Suffolk University, the Boston Globe, and WBZ, raising the possibility of an embarrassing loss for Warren on her home turf as her presidential campaign struggles to find a single contest she can win. 24% for Sanders, 22% for Warren.
Well, that's pretty close.
That's the margin of error in there.
4.4% is margin of error.
And did it say what, is it just between the two, that poll? I mean, is it say how
that
Biden
was the
doing? Does Biden have a number on that?
Now I have to read down further.
Oh, sorry. No, I mean, it'd be interesting
You're so good
with
at this
the
show.
Bump that Biden got over the weekend. I mean, the
so Biden's at 11, yeah. Buttigieg was at 12, Bloomberg at 13.
So it's now scrambled. What was the term we were using?
Mishmash. Speaking of mishmash, how about the mumbling, incoherent, and inarticulate address by Trump on Saturday? He looked as though he had just awakened from his tanning bed. Cynthia in Niskayuna. I saw it. I saw the whole thing.
I don't know which are they. They're the talking about the press conference yeah. on Saturday.
Well, the announcement of
because the rally on Friday night was a winner too.
Yeah. Also yes. terrible.
Well, I thought frightening. You know, in fairness, I thought he seemed more coherent on Saturday, and he was trying to present a image of calm and control. On Friday night, he seemed to be completely unhinged. So maybe it was somebody got to him and said, you gotta, you know,
rein it
together
in.
Here. Rein it in, yeah.
Well, all I can say is he's scared to death about the corona thing. He is scared to death about this. If this goes wrong on his watch, he's done for. And he knows it.
And that's why he delegated it to Pence.
He delegated
so that he can throw him under the bus. I mean, isn't that the worst day in your life as the vice president when this president is like, okay, the biggest issue that's going to dominate the headlines for the next month and a half that's competing with my airtime for my reelection, you get to handle that. He knows. Mike Pence knows exactly what's going to happen. And I wouldn't be surprised if it goes poorly if he's out as vice president.
And while we're on the subject, I just want to say that in my recent discussion with, I don't think Nikki Haley, too popular for him. He doesn't want that. She's not going to be a yes person the way that...
That's true.
So in any case, you know, in my conversation with the governor, I was astounded that the governor was actually being pretty conciliatory and nice about Pence, with whom he now has to deal on the coronavirus thing. And as soon as that conversation was over, we saw that the administration gave Cuomo the go-ahead to use the Wadsworth labs to do diagnosis. And I have a feeling there's a great deal, as well as all that money, is going to have to be given out somewhere. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then you've done it. Hi, panel. I listen and watch a lot of political coverage, and Alan is the first pundit that even mentioned the fact that Biden's numbers have been affected by Trump's constant election interference. Just imagine his numbers in Iowa and New Hampshire had Trump not constantly tampered with him through the Ukraine and more. Trump fears him for a reason.
It's an interesting point. Even though Trump was brought by the Democrats to the point of impeachment, and there was a trial in the Senate during
that
trial,
years ago?
Yeah, right. It seemed like so long ago. During that trial, the Trump supporters were able to articulate all of the allegations and all the innuendo against Biden and his son Hunter Biden, and you know, so they got to air it in a very public place. So even though Trump was impeached, it achieved his goal of besmirching his likely opponent. Right?
And here is a letter, a very good letter from somebody. And I'm going to file it in the "that ain't going to happen" file. I believe the winning ticket is Joe Biden as president,
yep.
and
drum roll.
Michelle Obama as his VP. Not only would this result in Donald Trump's exploding in anger and fear, it would be a unifying ticket for the Democrats. Catherine in Cambridge. But you know Catherine with a K in Cambridge?
I
you don't know her?
Well, maybe.
You know everybody up there, and they know
could
you,
be maybe,
Joe.
It could be Cambridge, Massachusetts, too, right?
No, Cambridge, New York.
Oh, Cambridge,
New York. Yes. However, I did want to say if Michelle Obama had run for president, she would have won.
Yeah.
So she didn't have to run for vice president, and she's
but
not going to.
I don't see that happening.
No.
I don't either. And, you know, America is tired of dynasties, mm-hmm. and that was proven in 2016, don't you think?
Well, yeah. It's interesting in the Kennedy-Markey race for Senate in Massachusetts, it does appear that Markey is doing better than a lot of people expected him to do. I interviewed both of them here on the Congressional Corner, and I have to say— Markey was extremely articulate, as was Kennedy. Anyway, let's talk about dynasties. Anyway, Maureen says, ranked choice voting. Ranked choice voting sounds like a great idea compared to the current nonsense. How do we common voters encourage such a change? Please explain how to get that done. Call your legislators.
Lobby your legislature to make those reforms.
Yeah, write a letter to the New York Times. For many years, I've been talking to political, you know, groups, League of Women Voters or whatever, and they always ask me, how do we get this done? How do we get that done? Mm-hmm. I always say, write letters to the newspaper. You know, I mean, it's a huge way of influencing the way people are thinking. In capital letters from David, good morning, panel. I'm reading aloud because it's in capital letters.
Sure.
The Democrats cannot afford to take smart senators and put them in the cabinet. They need them in the Senate if they want to get control. They can do it if the governor is a if their governor is a Democrat. That's right, because if they get out, the Republican governor gets to name somebody else.
That's true.
Yeah. Buttigieg. It was time for Mayor Pete to leave the Democratic primaries because it was plainly evident he did not have the support of Black America. No Democratic candidate can win it in the general election without the support of Black Americans. Buttigieg realized after South Carolina his candidacy was doomed. It was time to leave. Tom from Catskill, New York. Scott says, Buttigieg, Pete must run for the U.S. Senate.
In Indiana.
You never know.
Yeah, that's all within the cards. Or, he could make another bid to become chairman of the Democratic National Committee, which he had, that was his first
attempt. He'd be better than the guy
office.
They got.
Yeah.
Let's go to Roberta. Female VP Biden investigations. Should Biden commit to running with a woman VP candidate? If Biden is the candidate, can the Republicans start a congressional investigation of Hunter, et cetera? What do you think they've been doing?
Yeah,
it's been attempted.
Fern says health. Good morning, panel. With all the focus on physical stamina, let us not forget that one of the greatest presidents, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, served nearly four terms, well, three in a very little.
Three in 3 months.
Yeah, either balanced or on crutches or seated in a wheelchair. And one of the greatest scientific minds of our time, Stephen Hawking, was also physically challenged. It's what's going on between the ears that's most important, and that's Fern from Greenville. Well, a couple of things, right? Do you want to go first?
Well, that's absolutely right, and we have to be careful not to be ableist in our commentary, but I think the American public is paying attention to health indicators, and so...
Well, absolutely. Things have changed. No question that you're right about that. You know, the press knew about FDR's disabilities.
Limits, yeah.
Yeah, and they didn't report it.
But did they know really
how
physically ill he was when he ran for the final term and was elected in 1944 and died 3 months after his inauguration at the age of 63? I mean,
but
I don't know.
But, yeah. Mike, don't you think today they would know? The press would know.
Oh, yeah.
Well, they would have seen him smoking and coughing and.
I'm not talking about him. I'm talking about anybody.
Yeah, right. I mean, they would have. Would have they reported it? I mean, it was a different time. I mean, they didn't report about JFK, and it's widely believed that the press was aware of his own dalliances and his physical problems too. He had Addison's disease and.
And Ken says the most progressive thing Bernie Sanders could do to ensure a Democratic win right now is to drop out and throw his support to Biden. Ken, that ain't going to happen.
No.
From Tilson. Okay. And then Skip says, New York primary. Good morning, panel. Is there a chance New York voters will have any influence on the primary outcome this year? It's usually decided by the time it gets to us. Thanks, Skip. Yeah, well, I think this year there's a very good chance that the whole thing is going to go to the convention.
Yes.
And therefore, the New York votes will count a great deal.
So we'll be seeing a lot of television ads.
Right. And right now, Joe, can you check this for us? But right now, ahead, Bernie is significantly ahead in New York, right?
Well, there was a Siena College poll last week showed him ahead of Biden.
In New York?
Yeah.
But, I mean, isn't the impact of New York's delegates tempered by sort of New York's traditionally, well, no, I take it back. I was wondering if, you know, if it really is going to have as much impact as we'd like to believe because we're New Yorkers.
I'm saying it might.
As of March 2nd, Bernie Sanders has 26.5%. Mike Bloomberg has 23.7%.
And Biden?
And Biden has 15.4%. But again, all of this before.
Yeah, of course. And Max says, acrimony. Good morning, panel. Please remember that this primary campaign is no more contentious than prior years, just 4 years ago, but every contested primary is nasty and should be. And that's Max from West Marlboro, Vermont. And that's what I got, Joe.
That idea that it should be, contentious.
I think contentious is different than nasty.
Yes.
And I definitely think that we're taking a turn towards nasty, which I am not welcoming.
In New York, specifically, or just generally?
Nationally.
Yeah, okay.
But what happens when, without naming names, your followers become really nasty? I mean, really nasty. And then their standard bearer says, you know, I don't like that. I don't like that they're doing that. You know, so there's always that to keep your eye on because...
Well, and that's an element in multiple campaigns. I mean, there's been one or two that have been prominent in that type of conversation. But sure. As a candidate, there's not a whole lot that you can do about that. I mean, he could stand up and he had candidates who have this problem.
You can say the name. Yeah,
those individuals
have stood up and said, you know, knock it off. And that's...
Well, they get credit for knocking it off. The question is, do they secretly approve for what's been
well,
done?
Well, in the Republican primary back in 4 years ago, I can remember Trump getting up and saying, you know, back in the old days when somebody, a protester got up and had to be carried out of a Trump rally, an anti-Trump person, and he said, in the old days, we'd just take care of them right here, right now. We can't do that now, folks. So is he really telling his followers to...
Go back
to back off, or is he telling him to go outside and beat the living daylights
well, he did
out
say
of that,
that
guy?
Yeah,
right.
he did.
And
he did say
I'll pay their and I'll
and
pay
I'll pay their legal bills.
So.
Legal
yeah.
bills. So.
Yeah,
that contributes to the tone, don't you think?
I think it sets a tone, certainly. Yes. All right, we have just about 2 minutes before break, and then we'll move on. I do want to talk about coronavirus, so we'll talk a little bit about that, and then probably get into it much more when we come back from the break. I do also want to talk about the Netanyahu vote today, which is really interesting.
So it's today.
There's an election in Israel.
Yes. An election in Israel, and it's the am I right on this, Mike? Is it the third or the fourth election within a year? Third?
I thought it was. Sounds like third. But yeah. It seems like it's happening a lot.
Yeah.
So imagine if we had to go through this three times in a year. I don't think any of us could.
Well,
take
if
that.
We did it like they do it in the UK, just do it a few weeks, or Canada, they just do it a few weeks before
well, you know, it's
the
also
election
interesting
instead
that,
of like 3 years before.
It's also interesting that Netanyahu and Trump have such a close relationship that if I would be fascinated to know as Trump decreases in the polls, if he does, will it affect Netanyahu? Good question, though, right?
It's a great, yeah.
It was brought forth, I think, Meet the Press was talking to Bernie Sanders about that this week, and that did come up. So
about Netanyahu,
and yeah, it just is
so
foreign policy in Israel.
So what happens? I mean, if you. You say Netanyahu wins, then he still has to get the majority, right, of the
parliament.
The parliament.
Now, you remember that he asked the parliament to pass a law that said he could not be prosecuted, much like the president of the United States, and the parliament refused to do that.
And on the BBC this morning, they were talking about that Netanyahu was pleading with people because he needed a high voter turnout. And that was what he needed. And of course, there's great, you know, similarities there with what we see here of people just pleading for people to go out and vote. Mm. But who knows what will happen? We'll see. Let's take a break. When we come back, we will continue our conversation. We want to talk about coronavirus. We will do that right after this. We welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. Just while we were in break, there is a new Marist College poll and NBC Marist NBC poll showing this is in North Carolina, showing Joe Biden and Sanders neck and neck in North Carolina.
Makes sense.
And how
it does make sense.
What's the change
three,
there?
Is it listed there?
I'm sorry?
Is there a number three?
Keep doing this to
I'm
me.
Sorry.
no, not in this very short press release I got. No.
Yeah, no. I just wonder if it's Bloomberg or one of the ladies.
You know what? I do have it here, Mike. The information our good friend Lee Meringhoff made it possible. Bloomberg has 15%, Warren has 11%.
North Carolina is funny. I mean, even South Carolina is funny. The demographics of both states changes a lot. I mean, a lot of Northerners have moved down. A lot of Hispanics have moved in who've settled there after coming there as farm workers. And there's just it's a much more diverse population in North Carolina. It can go either way. Remember, it went for Obama, I think, in 08, but it might have gone for Romney in in 12, but it's very fickle.
All right, let's go to the letters.
Peter says, if Trump doesn't unite the Democrats, no Democratic candidate will. Well, that's very interesting. If you take a look at the polling, the Republicans, people who identify as Republicans, are far more likely to be unified over Trump than the Democrats are in general. So you get 90 in the 90s for Trump, for the Republicans, and in the 80s, mid-80s, for if I remember my stats correctly here, mid-80s for the Democrats.
Didn't you say earlier today that all the Democrats are pulling ahead of Trump, though?
Yes, they are. All the Democrats are ahead of Trump in a hypothetical
one-on-one
election.
Yeah. That's what I'm going to tell myself to go to bed every night from now until November.
Right. Just count polling points.
Yeah.
Oh. Tulsi says, oh no.
Somebody says something about Tulsi.
She's awoken.
Good morning, panel. Why is Tulsi Gabbard still hanging around?
Great question.
She was a less than zero chance of getting the nomination. She does have a cult following, or at least bots and trolls that pretend support for her on Twitter. What is her game? Greg from Avril Park.
I wonder at what point would she have to pull out of the congressional. Well, I guess she wouldn't have to. She could stay on the ballot in Hawaii to run for re-election.
Yep, and I was going to say relevance. I think it's, you know, she's got certain markets that she can still push her stuff out to. And it just because it's not the presidential race market doesn't mean there's not a reason to continue to have your name on a list on every television screen from, you know, Maine to Hawaii.
In South Carolina, she received 1.3% of the vote.
Wow.
Which was enough to leave her in last place.
Margarita speaks of civic duty. Dear panel, I believe it is a civic duty to vote, but it is not a duty to vote blue no matter who. Bullying and guilting people to vote that way failed last time, and it will again this time, whoever the nominee ends up being. That's from Margarita and Sorgatis, but I don't fully understand what she said. Now, we do like short letters, but I don't get this. Bullying and guilting people to vote that way failed last time, and it will again this time. So is this, I'm sorry, is this Sanders stuff?
I guess it's Sanders of saying that it's better to fight the good fight than to fight a fight that is perhaps winnable. Right? Is that the subject?
Well, he would say his fight is winnable, you know, arguably. But yeah, a lot of people are saying, I'll vote for anybody except Trump. So whoever wins the Democratic nomination, I'll vote for them. And that, I think, the writer is objecting to that, saying that you don't give up your ability to support the person you believe in the most. And by when you agree to that, previous position that I'll vote for anybody against Trump and being bullied into doing that, they're referencing is inappropriate. But
well, that's a little that letter was a little too obscure for me. Yeah. I mean, I don't want to project too much into it. And then we heard from Kurt, who says, "Who do you think Trump fears most, and why?" Thanks, Kurt. I already started the show by saying it's clearly Biden. He's been after Biden from the first day.
Yeah, I'm not. I worry about injecting any sort of lens of Trump into the conversation about who should be the Democratic nominee because I'm not convinced that Trump's fears are synonymous with electability. right? I think that the theory, and this isn't the one that Kurt is espousing, is the person that Trump fears the most is the person that can win. And I don't make that connection. I don't think that Trump has enough information at his disposal. You know, there's no connection in my mind. I think he fears whoever the front runner is at any given time.
And definitely
Biden.
I definitely don't agree with you.
I know.
I know. I mean, from the very beginning, Trump has been on Biden. Again and again and again and again.
But there was also a reason for him to do that. And that, I mean, there were a couple of reasons. One is that he's so anti-Obama everything, right? And Biden was very much a part.
Excellent.
Right?
Yeah.
And that then it was also like a detractor. It was a main, if he was doing market research of the headlines that could compete with his impeachment, Joe Biden at the time was chief among them because Biden had just announced his candidacy. So it's
and
temporal.
He was way ahead in the polls.
Yeah. I just, the longitudinal fear-mongering of Trump, the data doesn't bear it out. Like he fears whatever in the moment might cut at his numbers.
Except that, Sarah, and by the way, I wish I were in your law school class because you are so persuasive. Nevertheless, I did want to say that Trump knew from the beginning it was Biden he had to go after. He has not really, really, really gone after Sanders, that's for sure. Because Sanders is who he'd like, I think, but maybe I'm wrong.
I agree with you, Alan. I think he would like to run against Sanders. He wouldn't have to he'll have a lot of people carry the water for him and brand Sanders as a commie, as a Castro supporter down in Florida, where that will really carry a lot of weight. And they'll portray him as a revolutionary, and that scares people. And he'd be easier to beat than Biden, who does have that sort of Joe Sixpack appeal, you know?
Lauren writes to us the Hunter Biden issue. Joe Biden should put forward anti-nepotism legislation and ask all candidates, including Donald Trump, to sign on. When Trump declines, the Hunter Biden issue is over. I don't think so.
Every
piece of information we have is that those Republicans who support him do not move over off the dime, no matter what.
Well,
let me ask you this, Alan. What if you were his advisor, Joe Biden's advisor, how would you advise him going forward to deal with the quote-unquote Hunter Biden issue?
You know, it's a tough one. He made a major error.
He has already. How do you recover from that?
Well, I know what his advice is without my giving him advice. But I do know that they're telling him to weave Hunter into the conversation. So the other day when he was up there giving his victory speech, it was very pronounced. He wanted to thank Jill. He wanted to thank the kids. And he wanted to thank Hunter for being out there on the campaign trail for him. So basically, he's doing his own personal rehabilitation of Hunter's campaign. That's what I think.
It also sounds like ego to me.
Like, what do you mean?
You know, to put out his most vulnerable place as a place of strength, actually. So he's saying, you can come after my son. You lost. It's sort of, in a way, I don't want to get letters, but it's a little bit Trumpian in that regard. Like, you're going to attack my son, and I'm going to put him front and forward and show the world that I have nothing to worry about here.
So you answer, Sarah, you answer Mike's very good question. What would you tell Biden to do about Hunter?
Me?
Yeah.
No one should take political strategy talking points for me. I'm of the peace and love variety. I'd tell him to do the right thing and probably craft a press release.
And the right thing is?
Back off.
Yeah.
Okay. Back off and
that's from Lauren.
Make a strong statement condemning the behavior.
And then we also heard from Al, who said, ticket for Dems. I hope for a brokered convention. I think a strong ticket would be Amy Klobuchar and either Cory Booker or Deval Patrick for vice president. With some sense of humility, I can say, that ain't going to happen. Okay, so
Amy Klobuchar has to win a primary first.
And then Alice says, abortion. Every time you mention abortion as a plus, you deny the many Democrats who are sincerely pro all of life. 3 explanation points. Okay. Joanna says, online political ads today. Dear panel, I was just reading my online subscription to the Springfield Republican, and while I was viewing obituaries, two political ads kept showing up on the right side of the page. One said, socialist Bernie Sanders equals four more years of Trump, and another said, Bernie Sanders equals largest middle class tax increase ever. Both were paid for by Big Tent Project Fund. Do you know anything about this group that is spending money on online buys the day before the primary in Massachusetts?
Big Tent Project Fund?
I'll tell you right now again, and then you two guys with the machines will look it up.
It is a Bernie Sanders, an anti-Bernie Sanders super PAC.
Yeah.
His biggest donor is Stacy Schusterman, CEO of Samson Resources, and
so we don't really
oil
know.
Industries.
These kinds of ads, though, they tend to pop up all the time on a variety of websites,
yes.
You know, news websites, blogs, and things like that. It's a quick way to make money, and a lot of times they're allocated or associated through third party vendors.
So, and we have two more letters. Would you like to hear them, Joe?
I would love to hear them.
Okay, Joe. Catherine, with a K, from Albany, writes, Hi, panel. Every candidate has nasty followers. Bernie had the label in 2016 and 20. Obama had his Obama boys in 2008. There are plenty of diehard, vitriolic followers hanging on every campaign. Be honest. Catherine from Albany. I think we could mark that down as a Bernie supporter.
Well, and I definitely said that on air that many of the campaigns have their own issues. I don't remember Obama boys.
I do not remember anything about
and
the Obama boys.
I worked on that campaign.
And then we heard from Sonia. Listen to your kids. Younger people are smarter than you think. There was a great article in the Berkshire Eagle this weekend, written by a group of millennials, stating that beating Trump is not enough and calling on parents to vote for the only candidate willing to take on corporate interests that are destroying our planet and to create a world in which people survive over capital. Perhaps parents should follow their lead and join the Sanders movement. After all, it's their future, says Sonia from Lenox, who writes us every once in a while.
All right, we're just about out of time. My thanks to everybody. And we have, so there's no, there's 15 primaries tomorrow, and we'll talk about that. And then on Wednesday, that'll be a lot of information to go through.
Yeah.
And we'll see what happens in 48 hours, but yeah. a lot going on.
Well, the problem with this program is there really isn't enough news to talk about.
No, I know. We run out of stuff. We'll even talk about coronavirus tomorrow. I promise. I know we didn't get to it today. We mentioned it a little bit.
Well, big things happening in immigration land, and it's all the way to number 7 on the New York Times headlines. So.
Say that again?
Big things happening in immigration every other day, and it's okay.
All right. Well, we're going to take a break, and thank you all for being here. Appreciate it. We'll see you tomorrow. We'll be back right after this.